My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break and stay retro. Bye.
Do you find yourself playing older games and wishing that there were new discussions about those games? Enter Tales from the Backlog. Hi, I'm Dave Jackson, and on each episode, I'm joined by a guest to break down those games that may be stuck in your ever-expanding backlog. Each episode looks at one game in depth, focusing on mechanics, story, music, and other aspects with no spoilers until a clearly marked spoiler wall in the middle. If you've played the game, go ahead and climb that spoiler wall and enjoy in-depth story discussions, and if not, jump out when we warn you and maybe go play that game for yourself. We have over 100 episodes in the feed, everything from Disco Elysium to Tunic to discussion episodes about how to get into horror games, and if games actually need to be fun, or if they have more to offer. I guarantee that there's something in there for everybody. Once again, that's Tales from the Backlog, available wherever your podcasts are found.
Well, welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I'm here with returning guest Dave Jackson from Tales from the Backlog. Welcome back, Dave. It's always fun chatting with you.
Of course, yeah. Thank you for inviting me back. I had a great time the first time, and two new topics this time. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Since our last episodes, you also contributed an article to the Mario Tennis issue of Retro Game Zine, which was the, I forget the month. That technically was that the September issue? Is that what we're currently in right now?
I think so. Yeah, currently in September.
Yes. So at the time of this recording, I think by the episode comes out, it might be in October, but still, go back and buy the September issue with Mario Tennis. Dave's got a really cool article just about his history, actually with the sport, but also tied into his fandom of the game and everything.
My much decorated tennis career. Yeah.
Hey, regardless of what level you reached, you played far more tennis than I did in my life. So, yeah, you're the professional, essentially.
I suppose so. Yeah.
That issue is up on pixelsandpolygons.net. You can buy it digitally as well. The Patreon shop is where you can buy all that stuff digitally. But like $3 or for the digital and $10 for the physical. But get it. Read more stuff from Dave. Catch us up on you. What are some recent episodes that you had a lot of great had a great time with on your show that maybe you'd like kind of plug and tell listeners to check out?
Sure. Yeah. Recently, I've been in a run of indie games on Tales from the Backlog over the last month or so. So recently, the one that came out today as we're recording is about Ultros, which is a really cool, like psychedelic colored Metroidvania that is, let's say, I forget the word. It is doing surprising things with gameplay within Metroidvanias. I will just say that without spoilers. It's a very, very cool game. Before that, I did Despelote, which is a game from 2025 that a lot of people really liked. And that turned into a lot more like personal storytelting in that conversation with Moises Taveras of Endless Mode right now. And that was a really fun episode, too, because it was like half talking about the game and half talking about like how our experience is connected with the subject matter. And so those are the last two episodes, I think, are really interesting games. They're indies. I don't think either of them have like a lot of Steam reviews or anything like that. So they can both use the attention. They're very, very cool games.
That's cool. If you have not listened to Dave's show yet, like it gets a huge recommendation from me. It's structured in a way that even if you haven't played the game, you can listen to a majority of the episode spoiler free. It is written and is spoken and clearly enunciated when we get into spoiler territory on those episodes. It's a great listen. If it's a game I don't know that I'm going to play necessarily at all, like I'll still listen through the spoiler section as well. It's just nice to kind of hear the game kind of dissected and discussed in a way, and it's never like inflammatory, and I think that's why like I'm attracted to the episodes as well too. You're not like just dunking on things and being negative and getting like, you know, clickbaity about things, you know how like YouTube videos and stuff can be. So it's a great show. Big recommendation. So great job, Dave.
Thank you.
Let's get into it though. I want to do some this or that's questions to get our minds moving.
Absolutely.
We'll start with a simple one. Castlevania or Metroid?
Oh, that's tough. Castlevania. And probably like if you just took stock of like how many games in each series do I really like? It's probably relatively even. I think Castlevania has way more games than Metroid does. But aesthetically, musically, I mean they're different. Like the design, the sound design and stuff of Metroid is cool, but this is supposed to be lightning round, so give me Castlevania, and I'm going to say aesthetically, that puts it over the top. Vampires and skeletons are cool.
Cool. So this is kind of a weird question. A, B, or B, A? So, like, on the face of the controller, Nintendo has it laid out, you know, from, like, right to left with A to B, but, like, the Xbox controller, it's, like, A is where, like, the X button would be on a PlayStation, and B is where the circle button would be. So, what is your preferred layout for A, B, or BA?
I think purely out of muscle memory, it's the Nintendo layout because that's what I grew up with. Although I will say I'm able to adjust. So I can do the PlayStation model. But I think the Nintendo one is where my muscle memory takes me until I have to do something else.
Yeah. Cool. There was one weird hiccup I had on this for one of my kids wanted me to play like a Roblox game with them, and because Roblox is on the PlayStation, like that was the way I played it with them on their iPad, and I don't know if it's just an oversight or something, but like because it's been on the Xbox for a long time but only more recently on the PlayStation, but like It knew I was using a controller, and it told me to press the X button to interact with something, but it was referring to the Xbox X button, which would have been like the square button for the PlayStation. So I figured that out and like was able to like kind of remap my mind to be able to use it. But then once my my daughter tried to like play a little bit, like, oh, let me show you this, and she was trying to follow along, and it was confusing her because X wasn't doing what X was doing. It was doing, you know, what the Xbox A button would have been doing. And so it was just a whole confusing mess. It's weird that that UI oversight went through and has passed and maybe not even been reported on in Roblox for the PlayStation.
Yeah, that's one thing that I wouldn't be mad if, like, if I don't know, if like the video game leader of the world, whoever that is, decreed that all game controllers have to use the same layout, or at least like the same, the corresponding button. This is the confirm button in all video games moving forward. This is the back button. I wouldn't mind that being standardized.
Yeah, like you can use like the start and select style like buttons to be like those primary things and let the other stuff be what it wants. Who knows? Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Action RPG or strategy RPG?
Ooh, that, so the way you phrased that, I would tend to say strategy RPG, but I don't want to play something that's like real-time strategy. Like turn-based strategy, like Final Fantasy Tactics, something like that. Give me that basically most of the time.
Okay. Medieval or sci-fi?
Medieval, I think. I just think that that's, I think it's just, it's a little bit more boring, like at the baseline level than sci-fi, but like, I think that sci-fi has to clear a higher bar for me to think it's actually cool. Rather than just like, oh, we're doing something different. A bog standard like medieval setting is still like comfortable and familiar in a way that like I'm okay with it.
Okay. Last one here. Unnecessary sequel or remake?
You know, I'm not as anti-remake as a lot of people are. So give me the remake, because the unnecessary sequel, like, if it's unnecessary to the point where the studio is doing it because they feel some obligation rather than like they had like a great idea for a sequel, then just give me the remake. And I will maybe choose to not play it at all. But there are a lot of remakes that are coming out that like they do cool stuff. They have a different take on, you know, the first try, especially if it's like a game that came out a long time ago. I'm not talking about like the remaking The Last of Us Part 2 or something like that.
I mean, that's, I think, where my mind was coming from on that. You know, like some people who get up in arms about remakes and they're so upset, like what do they prefer to have? Like a sequel that maybe the creators or even like the story maybe not even like be set up for? Like, do they want some unnecessary sequel instead, or why not allow us to return to this world even if it is through the lens of a remake? I'm all good with remakes, especially if it doesn't influence or impact like the studio's ability to kind of continue to create new or original things. Like if you've got like a Blue Point Games or you know, like Digital Eclipse, or you know, these companies who are able to kind of like repackage, remaster, or remake these things and let those original companies still do things, why not just flood the market with remakes and allow us to pick what we buy if it doesn't hurt the future development of things, you know?
Right. And there's a lot of caveats with saying that you would prefer the remake, but like the other caveat being that, like, okay, so if you say you're going to remake, let's say they're like, we're going to remake Metal Gear Solid 4 next after the Metal Gear Solid 3 remake. Like, I think that you should make the original Metal Gear Solid 4 available for people to play too. That's like one of the bigger caveats is like, it would really suck if they remade Resident Evil 4 and they were like, guess what? You can't buy the original Resident Evil 4 anymore. That would be terrible. They didn't do that, but a lot of companies do that. The remake is the only one you can buy.
Yeah, like Silent Hill 2. I mean,
yes, exactly.
You can go back to the PS3 and get that strange HD collection that already kind of messed up the game.
Nobody likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100% agree. And that's also, you know, why I want like access to all these old games. I think these companies should have some teams as like ambassadors to like their retro wares and making them available and like playable, like not only for monetary reasons for them, but just for the access of that, those original games and designs and all that stuff for players to experience. So it's weird that we don't have a more uniform way of that. I mean, I feel like Nintendo, as much as they're, it's no longer called Nintendo Switch Online. I forget what it's called now, but
did they change it?
I mean, well, I forget what it's called. It is just called like that's something even more like generically like, oh, of course that's what it is. But whatever, it doesn't matter what the name is. That, you know, they just piecemeal deliver us a handful of games every now and then. There is no like rhyme or reason for it and everything. Like we don't have a say in what it is that we are going to see in there. But I love the simpleness and the access to it. But part of me wishes it was more of just like building a massive library like the classic like Wii Virtual Console was, where eventually it was just the storefront with like everything ultimately, well, not everything, but you know, it was just growing so significantly and there are weekly releases that eventually you had a massive amount to select from and find almost all the games you want. But we've kind of gone backwards from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of like places that are built up for like older, like retro games, basically like the Nintendo Switch Online thing, the PlayStation Plus Classics that they call it, GOG for PC games. Like there's a lot of places that are like they're there for classic games. So why not, you know, why not put Silent Hill 1, 2, and 3 on those? For some reason, none of those are available on like modern platforms. Silent Hill 4 is on GOG, but not the first three. So why not put them up there? Like, instead of it just feels cheap when they're like, no, we're holding out because like we might remake Silent Hill 1 in 2029 or something like that.
Yeah, they both can exist and we can spend money on both and fans would want both. So it's a weird line that they make there. But okay, that was the this and or that. So we're getting into it. I'll give you an icebreaker question here. A new update for the icebreakers. I have had this list I've been using since I started the show. But now, if you help support the show at the $1 tier on Patreon, you can also submit icebreaker questions of your own that I can potentially use. And if I do pick one of yours, I'll give you a shout out here on the show, and we'll use that for a weekly episode. So if you want to submit your own icebreaker question, go to patreon.com/DarrenHupke. Join for as little as a buck. It supports me and helps the show. And you can get your question asked here. But I don't have any of those right now. I'm going to go through my list. I still enjoy my list, some of these questions here. Let's see if I can not stump you, but get you thinking. What is an option or setting that you always change before starting a game?
Subtitles on. A lot of times they're on by default, but if they're not, I always put them on, no question at all. It is probably a holdover from like, you know, sound mixing in movies got like really bad, especially like specifically if you're watching them at home, it can be really hard to hear what people are saying. And also I have dozens and dozens of rock and metal concerts under my belt before I started wearing earplugs because I'm an idiot. So I could use the help following along with dialogue. So subtitles always go on.
Yeah, I am a big subtitle person as well, for similar reasons as well. And I get like the dynamic artistic nature that some sound design has gone through, but like a Christopher Nolan sound mix, like, you know, Bane in Batman, you know, like I'm struggling at home to even understand or hear what he's saying. And it may have been an artistic choice, but like, there are still spoken words there. Let me understand what's being said so I can be a part of this story and part of the process.
Yeah, I'm playing Dark Souls 2 right now, and Dark Souls 2 mixes the voices for the NPCs way down. So it would be really hard to understand if they didn't have subtitles. So I don't remember if that game has them on automatically or not, but I made sure they're on. Yeah, it's just, you know, I want to know what people are saying, and my hearing's not the best, so always go with it.
Okay. All right, well, let's get into the main topic then. We are at the main point of the episode. I don't know where we're at. Whatever. We're at this point. This is where we are. Yeah. We asked the question. This week's question, I had sent you the list again. You had selected a few you wanted to answer. But for this episode, we are going to answer What is a wow moment you had with a game? And in our discussion, I'd like to know what was it about it that kind of impressed you and kind of hear more about it. But yeah, what is a wow moment you have had with a game?
So when I started brainstorming, there were a couple that immediately came to mind, and they're probably, you know, the ones that everyone would say. Leaving the vault in Fallout 3, Breath of the Wild has a couple of amazing wow moments when the scale of the world is revealed to you. But I'm going to go with, see what I did? I cheated and said three. I'm going to go with the moment in Outer Wilds when you take off for the first time. You fly up into space for the first time. Have you played Outer Wilds?
No, but similar to your show, it's one of the more recent boss fight books covered Outer Wilds. And okay. It's on my shelf. I can't read the name of the writer, so sorry to not give you credit. But they did a great job just kind of like, you know, catching people up. But it was hilarious. And in a few points in the introduction chapter of it, they say to, if you have not played the game, please just stop reading this now and go play the game. That way you can kind of be familiar. And I like, they kept warning you that you should definitely like play it. And I was like, nah, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to read this book. I'm going to enjoy it. And I still love the book to death. And reading through it, like I kind of understanding what that scale and scope and what it sounded like I can picture it all. So yeah, I can see how this probably is a big one for the way that that game works with its like loop and its design and everything too. So yeah, definitely a game I've wanted to play, but I've never gotten around to.
Yeah. It's, even if you've read whatever's in that book, I think it's still worth playing because, you know, the joy of discovery will still be there, I think. So the reason that this moment works is, the first like hour or so of Outer Wilds, maybe half hour to an hour, is the tutorial that takes place on your home planet. So you wake up, you go around, you talk to everybody on your planet. It's a really small planet. You go to the museum, you read about the things that are out in the universe around you. You learn how to fly your jetpack. You learn how to pilot your ship, like with a drone, basically. And you have to do all these things to get these launch codes. And then you get the launch codes. You can finally go up to like the platform. You get in your ship and you take off. And your home planet's like super cozy. The music is really, really nice and you know, heartwarming and good. The soundtrack in Outer Wilds is incredible. And you get up to your ship and you're like, okay, this is it. I'm taking off into space. It's like a big moment for your character. You're a brand new astronaut. And the sound design of like the engines thrusting is like, it's massive. It's really loud. And you go up into space and your planet gets smaller and smaller beneath you. And you see like the scale of the universe that they created. If anyone hasn't played Outer Wilds, it's a clockwork universe that they've created on a time loop. So, you know, the planets revolve around each other. There's changes that happen to planets. And, you know, at a certain point, a comet goes through the solar system and stuff like that. And it's all revealed to you in this moment when you like, you take off, the thrusters burn, it's really loud. You feel the power of it. You go up into space, you see the scope of the universe, and the music changes. The music when you're flying is really great. And you're just like, all right, I can go explore the universe now, because that's all Outer Wilds will like give you, a push in one direction at the beginning of the game, but it's all open to you. You go wherever, if you're like, hey, that planet looks weird and cool, go check it out. There's nothing stopping you from going there. So that moment of like, it's partly like the sound of taking off. It's really impressive, really good sound design. But then that moment where you're up there and you're like, okay, I follow my curiosity now. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it sounds great. And then like there's a gimmick to the game, you know, a Groundhog's Day style element to it all too. So like, you know, you do get to experience it again and again, technically, and you start to piece things together. So yeah, and it's one of those games that I figured like after I read that book and how much I enjoyed just kind of like experiencing and kind of reading and hearing about like, you know, the development and the design of it all. There's a lot of conversation on like diegetic and like storytelling and like even the opposite of that. It's really neat. I've wanted to just like have some time go by so I can kind of forget a lot of that and then go in and experience the game. Because like after reading that, it definitely seems like a game I would totally dig. Did you finish the game? Did you like roll credits and see like the ending, quote unquote, or did you get the, I was going to ask, like, did you get a similar feeling once you knew you were on that path there? Like, you know, obviously lifting off for the first time and starting like the mystery of it all, you know, it's one thing, but when you realize that maybe you're going to kind of see the end of it, did you also get that same kind of like kind of bubbling feeling of where it was all like culminating to?
So yes, basically the whole experience of Outer Wilds is like if the game is clicking for you, it's all about like you follow your curiosity somewhere, or maybe you like find something that directs you to a new place where you're like, the mystery that I'm after, I'm going to find answers on this planet. And so you go to that planet and you figure out what it is or where you need to go. You get another lead and you're constantly like following some combination of leads that you find, but also your own curiosity. Because anytime, like, you know, if I'm following a lead and I hit a dead end, there's an entire solar system of other places that I can go check out. So if I'm like, hey, what about that comet that flies through? What if there's, can I land my ship on that comet? And the answer is, yeah, you can. If you're good at maneuvering, you can do it. And there's something there. You're always rewarded for curiosity like that. So basically the whole experience is that like curiosity driven play, which is really, really magical when it's hitting. The ending of Outer Wilds, which I won't spoil, the sequence of events that you do to get to the ending, I found was incredibly frustrating. And I really didn't like it. I liked, you know, the content of the ending, but what I had to do to get there was frustrating. But I got a second chance at it recently because I just played the DLC for the first time a couple months ago. And that, you know, if this episode's coming out in October or later, that's going to be an October episode on my show, is just about the DLC. And so I got another crack at not like enjoying Outer Wilds. I still really enjoyed it, but like more Outer Wilds, more of that curiosity driven gameplay and exploration. And like the magic was back a second time. Once you realize like, oh, this is what they're doing here. It's just like, I don't know that there's a game that I respect more than Outer Wilds, like from that perspective of like, nobody really ever sits you down and says, Hey, Dave, the answers are on this moon. Go to this moon and talk to this person. He'll tell you what you need. They never do that. It's up to you to figure out, like, okay, I might be looking for this person. Where did they go? Nobody really knows. So it's up to you to follow the crumbs and get to it however you can.
Yeah, that's the interesting aspect of that game, too. It's, you technically could ruin the entire game for yourself if you read, like, you know, where certain things are or what's going to happen at certain times and things like that. And that would just cut out the whole like essence of what it is that you want to do in that game. So it's one of those, you know, like, a, you know, games as an art conversation as well. That's one of those games that probably like stands up there to like help like drive that conversation, that, you know, games can be, you know, art, and you don't want to shortcut, you know, things like that too. So that's cool. It's just definitely, it's probably my favorite game I've never played, just because of how much I've like read about and invested in. I did a review for it on my Patreon, but a lot of what it's talked about inside is the ludonarrative dissonance, gating diegetic and non-diegetic concepts and more. So it's like there's an academic tone to it, but not one that ever makes you feel like dumb as a reader. Like, I'm not, you know, the most academic of readers and everything, but I was able to keep up and like really enjoy what was being said. Tommy Wallach is the name of the writer. He also designs escape rooms out in LA, apparently, which is kind of a neat job to have.
I can see how someone who designs escape rooms would have Outer Wilds speak to them, because because of like the clockwork nature. You solve this that lets you go here and solve this and yada yada yada. Outer Wilds is just like super, super impressive, like from a technical perspective too, because it's a solar system of dynamically changing planets. And, you know, it's a loop of 22 minutes, but like, if you go to this place at minute 4 versus minute 17, it could be completely different. And so there's discovery to be made along the timeline too, not just in like static things that are there. And so like, if you're curious, it's just like catnip of a game for people like that. And that's why, like, there's certain games that people say this about, but that's why, like, you truly can only experience Outer Wilds once, because even like I played the DLC 3-4 years after I played the main game, and I still, like, it was like, if you beat the DLC, then there's another ending to the main game. And I was like, okay, I'll go do the main game. I still remembered what I had to do for the main game. So like, even with 4 years and, you know, hundreds of video games and generally a poor memory, it still was in there. It's why, like, you can play it once. That's kind of your one shot at it, because you'll never be able to replay it without knowing anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is on your topic list. It would be a fun topic. Like, what game would you Eternal Sunshine out of your mind and experience again for the first time? I bet you people will bring Outer Wilds to that topic if you do it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to add that experience again. Is my note for that. Yeah, that'll be a good future episode. Maybe a future episode you can come back again and answer that one as well too. So I'll add that to my list.
I'll pick a different game if I come back for that.
No, you'll tell Outer Wilds because we all forgot about it the entire time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's it. We did the thing. We answered the question, and that's the episode. So thank you, Dave, for joining and sharing that. I think that's a great share. Again, I just finished that book a couple months back, so it's just kind of fun to still kind of be in that world, even though I've never set foot in that world. Anything you'd like to plug before we wrap the episode? Anything you want listeners to kind of check out?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. Good time chatting with you as always. And so I'm the host of Tales from the Backlog. If people have not listened to the show before, I have almost 200 games on the feed in the archives, and every episode is a multi-hour deep dive conversation with no spoilers for a while. It's usually over an hour of no spoiler conversation. So anything, whether you're interested but never played it, or if you played it and you want to hear someone, like, you know, dive into the story and stuff like that, we do that too. It makes it a little inconvenient to record that way, but I do it so that people who don't want to be spoiled can still enjoy the show. So that's Tales from the Backlog.
Yep, I'll have links to that in the show notes as well. So if y'all want to click on there and check it out, please do. Big recommendation for me. So thanks, Dave. We will catch you again on a future episode for sure.
Yeah, can't wait.
Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.